Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. We are embracing the journey, but there are definitely bits we'd rather not embrace, like some health issues. UTIs, urinary tract infections, are painful and life-reducing. If they're chronic, they are life-altering. My guest today is a follow-up of my conversation in January with Paula Cobb. Laura is the founder of Let's Talk UTI. It's the only U.S.-based patient advocacy organization dedicated to shining a light on the issues around urinary tract infections. I have learned so much during my conversations about UTIs. Both Paula and Laura are lifelong sufferers of chronic UTIs. Their stories are an education in themselves. If you're like me, you'll be surprised, even astonished, at the prevalence, the severity, and perhaps most dreadfully, the age at which these can start. Listen now. I cherry-pick my first few guests of every new year. This year, my health pick for episode 2 of 2025 was a woman dealing with and talking about UTIs, urinary tract infections. Paula is part of the UTI Health Alliance, which seeks to create awareness, education, and community about urinary tract infections. Paula shared a lot of great information, and she mentioned that the UTI Health Alliance was undergoing a bit of a rebrand, and the new website would go live soon. Soon is now, and I'm really pleased to welcome the founder of the alliance, now called Let's Talk UTI. That's the name of the alliance, not the founder. It's the only U.S.-based patient advocacy organization dedicated to shining a light on the issues around urinary tract infections. The organization provides essential insights, advocates for research initiatives, and promotes education to create meaningful change in UTI care. A particular focus is addressing the mental health crisis that emerges when patients experience UTI symptoms but receive negative test results, a common occurrence given that testing protocols have remained essentially unchanged for 70 years. Whew. UTIs affect 60% of women, with approximately 30% of those women developing recurrent or chronic infections. We might cover a few things that Paula and I discussed in January, but this topic is so important to women that I'm happy to welcome Laura. Laura Helgeson, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
In your profile, you say that you've lived with UTIs for nearly six decades. Do you mind sharing how grueling of a journey that is?
Thank you. Yes, it's true. I just turned 59 and I began experiencing UTIs at about 2 years old. And yes, it has been very, very grueling at times. It's kind of ebbed and flowed throughout my life during that almost six decades. But when I hit perimenopause and menopause, the symptoms became constant and the infections became very, very virulent, and my test results started becoming negative. So I had tested positive for UTI for 40 years, and then suddenly, with worsening symptoms, I started testing negative with our current testing that's available in most doctors' offices.
I don't think I even had a clue that a two-year-old could get a UTI. Now, how did they figure that out? Because you wouldn't have been able to put words to it.
Right, exactly. So a lot of this for me personally was pre-verbal. So I don't have actual memories of this until I started seeing doctors. So my mom told me, you know, I started having problems around that age, and that's what I have to go on. But I do have a very strong memory, which created a lot of trauma for me, lifetime trauma, around the age of 4. And I'm not sure if you want me to go into that or not, but it is stunning. And I believe children are probably facing this in doctor's offices even today. And it's a very, very, I'll just tell you what it is. It's called bladder hydrodistension. And it is a procedure in which they go into your bladder through your urethra and fill it, I believe, with water so that it stretches. And they now do this procedure under anesthesia. But when I did it, I was in a doctor's office with a middle-aged man who I did not know. My mother was not allowed to be in the room with me, and I did not have any anesthesia. So that was kind of the beginning of my memories of UTI because that was so traumatic.
I can't even imagine. Like, yeah, I can't imagine that would fly these days. I'm surprised it flew in those days, but yeah, that's...
Yeah. Well, I think that having it done under anesthesia is probably a really good decision. But also, I have talked to many people in my age range who have had this done maybe a few times, and ultimately it's not very helpful. So I'm not sure about the procedure itself.
Is there any correlation between like having them, because I think Paula mentioned something too, that she started having hers quite young. Mm-hmm. Is there any correlation between having UTIs at a really early age and becoming a chronic UTI sufferer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great question. Once you have a UTI, your susceptibility for having continued UTIs goes up. So every one that you have increases your susceptibility of having more. So if you start having them as a young child or even an infant, the susceptibility throughout your life is there.
Okay, I sort of went off there when you said about that, being all alone. Can we just go back to the beginning? Can you tell our listeners exactly what a UTI is? Maybe what causes it, please. Sorry, as I say, I'm just like, oh my God.
I know, I started with a shocker.
The mama bear in me came out.
yeah, exactly. Well, a UTI is a urinary tract infection, and we at UTI Health, at Let's Talk UTI, mostly deal with lower urinary tract symptoms, but a kidney infection is also part of the urinary tract, so that could happen as well. Usually it starts in the lower urinary tract, which is your urethra and your bladder, and it can sometimes worsen, and then the bacteria can go up into your kidneys, which is a more serious infection, although they're both very serious. Usually this starts with bacteria invading the bladder that is like a pathogenic. It's not a happy bacteria. It's not a bacteria that we feel is, feeling good in our bodies. And so it can multiply. And that's what happens when somebody gets a urinary tract infection. The thing that I think is a misnomer is that the most common bacteria is E. coli, and that is true. However, this is a multibacterial infection. Many people have several other bacterias that are causing problems, and the tests that currently are out there in the doctor's offices do not test for those bacteria. So you can have all the symptoms, all the problems of a urinary tract infection, which include frequency of having to void, terrible bladder pain, urethral pain, pain upon peeing, which feels somewhat like peeing shards of glass. And there are so many other symptoms. There are full body symptoms, especially when you get beyond that acute stage, when you go into that chronic stage. You get into symptoms that have to do with people have pains all over their bodies. They are very nauseous. It's a full body experience, which is very unfortunate. Yeah.
I'm wondering how many of our listeners right now are just nodding along because they've
gone
through that.
Most women know what this is like.
Yeah. Now, it's hard to believe that given how dreadful this can be and how life-changing it can be, that nothing's been updated, testing methods haven't been updated for like 60, 70 years. Is
right.
that because, and I hate going there, but I'm going to go there, it's just the patriarchy that was like doctors 60 years ago, you rarely found a female doctor.
Right. You know, I don't know the exact cause, but I do know that they only started including women in research in the late 90s. So women weren't included in any research, and this is a mostly woman infection. So just that by itself, there's a lot of research to catch up on. And there's not much funding. We have some amazing researchers working on this project globally, but they need money to do this work. And this is not a simple infection. It's a very mysterious infection, I would call it. Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm trying to remember from my conversation with Paula. It's like 30% or like a really low, well, comparatively low percentage of men that get UTIs as opposed to women. And yet the research was mostly male
or all male? I don't know what the research was. What I do know, and I think Paula mentioned this in the interview that you had with her earlier, I do know that that test was never created to test for lower urinary tract symptoms. It was a test created to address kidney infection in pregnant people. So the test itself was never created for the use it's now used for. So I don't think there's been enough research for sure. And there are some people working on it now who are coming up with some really good point of care testing models. They're not at market yet. However, there are tests that are available right now. They're kind of like COVID tests, PCR tests, and next generation sequencing tests that are far more, they just detect the bacteria so much in a broader sense and in a more accurate sense for people who are testing negative in the standard urine culture. I think the problem is that when a person is told, you don't have an infection, and they're writhing in pain. The pain never lets up. They can't leave their house because they're strapped to the bathroom. They've lost their jobs, possibly their marriages, because it really affects intimacy. And, you know, when that happens and you're told there's nothing wrong with you or you need psychological help or go home and do some yoga, those are really great things to do, but they do not treat infections.
You mentioned, you know, urination. We women are well aware that urination, defecation, and sex all happen in pretty close proximity to each other. You know, my generation of women were often raised with, you don't talk about that area.
Yes.
Do you find that that has affected women over the years, so they just don't want to go to the doctor about it because it's too personal? And please tell me that it's changed.
Well, that's our goal. That's what we call this organization, Let's Talk UTI, because it hasn't been a topic that women are willing to share about. There's so, it's such a vulnerable area of the body. And oftentimes women are made to feel like it's their fault when we know it's not. So we have a whole kind of dynamic that we have to change. It's a big change that needs to happen with clinicians and patients. The clinicians need to believe patients' symptoms and treat them accordingly, come up with a plan to manage some pain, because the pain is pretty horrific. And, you know, there's so much education that needs to happen even there with the clinicians. We need them to know, oh, these bacteria are not susceptible to the test that you're giving. So that doesn't mean that they don't have an infection. It just means that the test is faulty. So if the clinicians all knew that, they wouldn't be telling patients to go get psychological help. And it's this kind of education, the gap between research, what research knows, and what clinicians know, that is something I'm trying to make a dent in. But we're far, far from having this change. I mean, we have a lot of work to do. And all I can say is, let's talk UTI. Let's just all talk about it, because that's our vision here, is to talk about it everywhere and regard it seriously.
So potentially, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question, how many different bacteria could be found?
I think three, four, maybe five. I'm not an expert in this area, but those are the ones I've heard of. And I don't necessarily want to name the bacteria because I'll mess it up. But sometimes it's multibacterial. And what happens is you can treat one bacteria and then another bacteria will emerge because it's a, you know, now that's available to emerge. So it's, they're hiding in the bladder lining under, Paula covered this, under biofilms, which protect them from antibiotics. So the bacteria are having a grand time inside the bladder lining when the antibiotics can't really get to them.
And do they, like so many other things you hear about, they go like, oh, there's an interesting antibiotic. It doesn't really affect me, but I'm going to build a few walls up, a few defenses anyways against antibiotics or that antibiotic.
Oh, yeah. I don't really know the answer to that, but it is a very good point that this UTIs are a major contributor to antimicrobial resistance, so resistance to antibiotics, because I think... I'm not sure exactly what place it's in, but I think it's the second most common infection, period. And so antibiotics are really, in the U.S., our only line of defense. And those are becoming less and less, you know, they don't work as well because people have built up resistance to them. And I'm not really quite sure how that resistance process works. But obviously the bacteria get smarter and know how to get around the onslaught of antibiotics or have developed defenses to it, or I'm not really sure how that works. Yeah. But it is a definite problem. And there are so many other therapies that are emerging in other parts of the world or that have been around for 100 years in Eastern Europe. That's called phage therapy, which I myself have done, and was literally a lifesaver. And phages are not antibiotics, they're viruses. And they're viruses that can be targeted to certain bacteria. And they just go into your body and they go straight to that bacteria and they lyse it, which means they multiply inside it and then they blow it up. So the bacterial cell does not exist anymore. And if I had not done phage therapy this past year, I don't know if I'd be talking to you today. So it was a lifesaver for me, for sure.
Whew. Okay.
But I had to go to the country of Georgia to get that. And, you know, I did not actually fly there. We did this all via samples over the sea and test results, you know, over the internet and stuff like that. But that itself was extremely expensive, just the FedEx prices to send the phage here or to send the samples there. And people just don't have that kind of money.
Well, they might not have the money, but how would they even find out about it? I mean, you're immersed in this.
Right. So they can read our website. We have a blog.
There we go. Okay.
We have a blog on phage therapy, and we have so many resources on our website.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get you to go there in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Now, I tried to do some research coming in. Our audience is mid-age women.
Yes.
After menopause, what I read is that a decline in circulating estrogen causes changes in the urinary tract. And those changes, can increase the risk of UTIs. Is that right?
That is right. That has been studied fairly extensively, that there's a drop in estrogen in perimenopause and menopause. And that has been, you know, the reason people are experiencing more UTIs at that point of life. So there are a few normal entry points to this. I hate to say that, but, you know, beginning sexual activity is an entry point into UTIs. The second really big one is people who are our age, who are in, you know, midlife and experiencing a drop in estrogen because of menopause. And a lot of people do really well with estrogen therapy, a vaginal estrogen therapy. And, you know, anybody can ask their gynecologist about that, or even urologist about that, because that's been proven to be very helpful for some people.
My background was facility elder care.
Okay.
And
that's
UTI.
That's the next big entry point is elderly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So now the other thing that, of course, comes with especially facility elder care is catheterization, adult diapers, decreased mental and physical ability. So just for self-cleanliness, that is reduced, I'm sure. And I don't, most of the places I worked, I think they had that really good bath cleanliness thing once a week. You know, can you talk about that population? Because a lot of our listeners are caregiving parent mothers.
Right. Yes. I've been one. That's been one of my goals, is to study the elderly population more. Unfortunately, there's not very many. There's not much research about that population regarding UTIs at this point. We do know that the population of elderly folks does have a lot more susceptibility to UTIs than other younger people, and especially men are much more susceptible at that age range than in earlier age groups. So certainly cleanliness is a problem. Not being able to speak on your own behalf is a problem. And so often the look of dementia might be a UTI, an untreated UTI. So these are things to check out. Hopefully most care homes know that if somebody is, you know, not remembering things and not acting the way they did when they were admitted or whatever, that they should test for UTI. However, the testing is so bad that we have a real problem with the spiral of this, you know, like people having real problems, but having no testing that will really help us out, or, and even treatment, like where's the treatment? So we've got to push for more. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. But certainly that age group, it becomes very dangerous. People can get sepsis from, it's called urosepsis from a UTI, and people die from that. It's like 25% of the hospitalized patients die from urosepsis.
You've just made me realize that, like, with all the negatives that come back is, my mom had dementia, and her behaviors took a sudden left turn. The first thing I did, because I had the background, was to have her tested for a UTI, but it sounds like she could have had a UTI anyways, just because it came back negative.
That's scary.
Yeah.
We need to do better. And that's what I'm pushing for. It's just, we just need if every patient or every caregiver knew the problems, then I think we'd have hopefully enough bravery in the clinician's office to say, this is not right. Here are my resources for showing you that this is not right, and something needs to happen. If every person went into the clinician office and said that, we would have a movement. And yeah.
Okay, so talk to us about clinician, because we've talked about hormones, we've talked about bacteria, we've talked about viruses. Does a regular GP, can you start there, or should you go into a more specialized practitioner?
I mean, I think all practitioners, nurse practitioners, nurses, anybody who's going to treat the patient needs to know about this. So I mean, most people who don't have other urinary problems, they will go to their GP, and or even like they have the online thing that you can do video
visits. Telehealth or something.
Yeah. Telehealth, right? So if you're getting a negative test and your symptoms don't match, then that's when I think it's time for the patient to advocate. It's so hard to do when you're just struggling so hard in your own body just to even get through the day. So it's so hard to do. However, we have resources on our website that will help, that can like help you just show your doctor, here are the studies that this doesn't work. Could I please have some advanced testing? Here are the links to the advanced testing. You know, they don't have to do much work other than just like click on a link that the patient can provide, because we have it on our website. And there are a few other organizations in the world who are so fabulous at this, in Europe and in Australia. They're further along than we are at Let's Talk UTI. They're older. They've been started in the late teens of the 2000. So they have just excellent resources as well.
Okay, so you've mentioned testing a few times, and better testing choices. Can you go there? Can you explain what those are?
Sure. Okay, so right now we have, in the doctor's office, we have a dipstick test, which is what's most often done. You pee in a cup, and then they dip in a stick, which has sensitivities to various things. And if it doesn't come out with an infection, proving infection, sometimes, not all the time, the doctor will order a culture, and that's called the standard urine culture, or as someone has provided an acronym, SUCK, which I just love so much because that's exactly what it does. It does suck because it missed 70% of infections. That's a lot. And so if you don't find that those tests are helping you, that they're not matching your symptoms, then you can move on to PCR tests. And those are expanded. I mean, they're not as expanded as next generation sequencing tests. I do not know all of the microbiology that goes into these things because I'm a former musician. I can do other things, but not that. And those tests are very sensitive, and they can usually be the results. If your doctor orders a test, the results can be back within, I don't know, within a week. And if you're suffering with this for years or decades like me, a week is nothing. You know, give me the test. Let me know what's going on. Yeah. And then it shows what you're resistant to as far as antibiotics are concerned, what the bacteria is susceptible to, which is super helpful. And I'll tell you exactly what the bacteria is. So those are widely available in the U.S. right now. They just haven't been adopted. I feel like some people feel that they need to be refined in some way, but they're a heck of a lot better than what is actually happening right now.
Well, and I think I probably speak for a lot of women out there who, you know, if you don't know it exists, it's hard to request it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you touched on this at the beginning. What happens if a UTI goes untreated?
Well, I think if a UTI goes untreated, some people can just drink a lot of water or cranberry juice or take D-mannose, which is a wonderful supplement, and rid themselves of it. They don't have to go down the antibiotic route. There are supplements which are helpful for some people, but there are others who have not had it sufficiently treated. Most people will go to get it treated because it's so painful eventually, but if it's not sufficiently treated or it's undertreated, or maybe they don't go into the doctor's office, then you're causing possible lifelong problems for yourself. So it becomes recurrent, it could become chronic, and then people could go into sepsis. Or people can die from suicide because that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah, I heard that. Now, it seems to me, I'm trying to remember, and I don't want to repeat what Paula and I talked about, but if I remember correctly, she said something along the lines of often a doctor will give you 5 days or 7 days of an antibiotic, but you need that full 2 weeks to...
I believe it was in the late 90s that they went down in the treatment for UTIs from like 7 days to 5 days. And I have a wonderful chart that says all of the rate of increase from 1998 to 2018, I think. It goes straight up. And that's when they started limiting antibiotics. In Europe, they went down to 3 days instead of, 7 days. Also, animals are treated with 14 days. Men are treated with 14 days. So we got to, there's a problem. There are so many problems, it's hard to know where to turn. But we just really want to make people aware so that they can, advocate for themselves. And we want this to become a movement. It's one of the most common infections in the world. And it's time to have it addressed with such importance. And it can be a killer. It's certainly a life taker as far as diminishing your life.
At what point in time is a history of UTIs considered chronic?
They don't recognize chronic UTIs in the United States. So that's where we are with it. They recognize recurrent as being 2 times or more in 6 months, or 3 times or more in 1 year as being recurrent. But there are many people who have chronic, just never-ending symptoms, and that is not yet recognized in the U.S. guidelines or literature.
Oh boy.
You have a lot of work to do, and in a way it's exciting, and in a way it's just it feels overwhelming.
Now, one of your downloads is called Preparing for Your Appointment. What sort of notes, I don't know, should a woman keep before going into a doctor?
I think a lot of people find it's very helpful to keep like a symptoms chart, something that will be like this day, this I had frequency, I was going pee 15 times overnight, or those kinds of things. This is what my pain was like. I think some people find that very helpful in explaining themselves once they get to the doctor's office, because it's so hard to explain. You kind of blank out, or you feel scared. So that's very important. I also think it's important to say, what worked, what didn't. Could be, some people really do have success with cranberry juice, not that super sugary stuff, but I've never found success with that. But some people, I know people who do. So, everybody has to try their own thing. But yeah, I think that preparing for your appointment thing is super helpful. And we have the worksheet on our website, which is downloadable. And this worksheet also has the links to four different tests. So, four different advanced tests. So, a patient could bring that into the doctor and say, these are the advanced tests. Yeah, let's work on this together. I'm really trying to get the clinician-patient relationship to be more of a collaboration.
So if the patient, the woman takes the four links in, this isn't going to Georgia, is it? Country, Georgia, like you had to? Like, is
Oh,
there?
no, this is just going to the doctor. Is
Okay.
that what you mean? Yeah, this
Well, it
is
was
just.
just more of like, do samples need to be sent to the country of
No,
Georgia?
this is US-based.
Okay. Oh, because that other
Testing.
was the phage? Is that what it?
Phage,
Phage.
PHAGE.
Okay. I hope everybody wrote that down. They can go do some research.
Yeah, you'll have fun if you do research. They're cute little videos. It looks like a little robot.
Oh, okay. Sorry, just thinking about all the kerfuffle right now with AI and that sort of stuff. But okay, give us some positive news. How can we reduce our risks of our risk of UTI?
Oh my. I don't know if I can give you very much positive news around
I
that.
was just
I
thinking it's.
honestly think, I mean, there's kind of an insulting thing that women hear oftentimes at the doctor's office about hygiene, which is to wipe from front to back. I think that's a great practice. However, if that was the solution, we wouldn't have this problem right now getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So I think, while that's a great practice, I don't think it's very helpful in general. I mean, it doesn't really keep you from getting a UTI. It might keep you from getting more UTIs. I don't know, but that's not the answer, is what I'm saying. I mean, I can't tell you, because I think that in a way, just even saying, how can you prevent? They say, pee after sex, get out of your wet exercise clothing. However, I think some of that just puts the onus on the patient, because this is not caused by the patient. This is caused by bacteria. So I don't know that there are any really good answers. I'm sorry, I really don't have much positive
No,
news
as I was asking the
other than we're
question, I'm
talking
thinking,
about it.
as I'm asking the question, I'm thinking, she's going to say, damned if I know, because otherwise I would have done it years
Right. I mean,
ago.
these are things I hear that people do, and maybe they help some people, which is great. But the problem is that we have an infection that's not being treated and not being tested properly, and there are no, options out of this until more money is thrown at this issue, which is certainly needs to happen.
Okay, here's a really random question. I'm sorry to do this to you, but I'm just thinking of the styles of underwear for women in the last, say, 30 years. We went from my mother, I'm sure, wore bloomers. I had something called petty pants when I was there, a little bloomery
Oh,
kind
that's so cute.
of. But now we've gone like to bikini thong, like all that stuff. There's my random question. Do you think underwear styles have done anything to promote it? Okay.
No.
Sorry.
I think some underwear styles that have been developed in the last several years, like period underwear, can be helpful to people who struggle with this because, you know, there's urgency. You might not quite make it to the bathroom on time, or, you know, other urinary issues, some incontinence or whatever. So that period underwear sometimes can be helpful with that. So in that way, I think that development is helpful for our population. But I mean, I don't know if thong underwear helps to prevent it. I mean,
Oh no, I meant to promote it.
that's what I meant, to promote it. Yes,
Okay, yeah.
thank you for correcting me. I just really think
Okay, I told you it was a
we
random
need even more
question.
research. No, it's a great question because when you're in the situation, I have really good pain days and really bad pain days. I always have pain. But my husband might say, "What do you think's going on?" And I'll be like, "Was it the thing I ate? Was it the, you know, did I have a glass of wine?" Which I don't drink at all anymore because it aggravates me. You know, there are some dietary things that might be helpful to keep your bladder from having, you know, sort of like tomato sauce poured into it. But I could say, you know, it's because there is a cloud in the sky. That's how you try so hard to grasp at straws to make a reason of this, but there's no reason yet. I believe there will be a discovery of the reason. And researchers are coming up with wonderful discoveries, but I don't think we have the answer yet.
You just reminded me now that there was something you said earlier about, in terms of prepping for the doctor, I peed 15 times in the night. Can a person be a chronic peer, for lack of a better term, and not, or either A, not have a UTI, but also where I was going with that is, can you have a UTI but not really have any pain?
Yes, that is asymptomatic yes, asymptomatic UTI. That's very common, especially in an older population.
So how, I can't imagine then if you're not having any pain, you just sort of go, oh, this getting older is crap, and I hate going to the bathroom all the time. But should a
Oh, you're
person
saying
who's
that they're peeing frequently. That's a sign of UTI, though,
okay.
frequency. Yeah, so if they're peeing all the time, that's a sign of UTI. That's a symptom. But if they have no symptoms, I think the general consensus is and they have a positive test. The general consensus is we don't treat it.
Yeah, I was just
Yeah.
more thinking of someone who peed a lot, didn't
Yeah.
have the pain,
Right.
but you're saying that could still be a UTI. Maybe they should
Yes.
go get tested.
Yes.
Okay.
But I don't know if getting tested is really valuable unless you. I mean, it might be. Might be for some people. And it is for some people getting tested. I would test a positive for 40 years. And I wouldn't test positive on any of those tests now.
Okay. I guess I was just sort of thinking, if they got tested, thinking maybe this is early UTI, it might prevent them from advancing to that high pain stage. But I guess it just sounds like there's so many unknowns because
There
the
are so many
research.
unknowns. It's
Yeah.
so true. I mean, it would be great to be able to give a promising answer. I think for me, just having an ability to do something about this by creating our nonprofit, if anybody wants to donate to Let's Talk UTI, we'd love that. But by just creating a resource that has, you know, those downloadable prep for your appointment resources. We have links to an incredible study done by the Chronic UTI Australia. It's called Hearing Patient Voices. And they did a survey of 410 chronic UTI patients. And the numbers are just staggering about the lifestyle impact and what they experience at the doctor. It's an amazing thing to look at. Our blog is getting really, you know, filled out with so many different articles about different things, including phage therapy. And we have a newsletter, we have patient stories. I mean, it's just at least there's something out there for people to become educated so that they can go to the doctor with some amount of education. That's my goal.
Well, and it's been interesting, just my own internal, as we've been chatting, is, perhaps as women, we get educated and we get angry and then we act,
Right.
so I'm sure by going and looking at your resources, reading the research, all that sort of stuff. And especially if we know somebody that is a UTI sufferer.
Right. I love that last sentiment about if we know somebody, because it's so interesting. Since I started this work, people sometimes will ask me on the airplane or wherever, you know, what do you do? And I tell them, and then almost, you know, 50% of the time they start crying just as soon as I tell them. They say, this is my story. This is my grandmother's story. She was supposed to come to the holidays, but she couldn't come because she was in the hospital with sepsis and she died. That was something I heard just this past couple of months, you know, since the holidays. And everyone knows someone who's experiencing this, but we need to talk about it so that you're not having to hide it. And then it becomes so normal that it's like talking about a strep throat infection or a lung infection. It's just a different part of the body.
And I'm just thinking, once again, going back to my own employment history, is if you've got an elder with some form of dementia, they can be in extreme pain. And again, just like a child, not be able to put words to it to describe exactly what's going on.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to, I've heard of two, just as in the last 6 months, and these are just people I've talked to. Two people had, one was in India. She had her mother in the hospital with urosepsis. And she kept saying, you know, please, can you, I'm a microbiologist. Can you please do this advanced testing? Can you try this? Can you try that? And they refused. And her mom died. So this is a real thing.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you want mid-age women to think about, to know?
I just want everyone to know that they're not alone and that it's okay to talk about this. There's no shame to be had. It's not your fault. I think that's the most important thing, is it's not your fault.
Yeah, that's big, because I think too often they do get told the, well, you've got to clean yourself better. You know, it is, people do say, and it, you know, whether they're lay people or professionals, mm-hmm. if people are telling you it's your fault, then you quit talking about it again. Because you don't want to be seen as somebody who can't take care of their own pericare.
Right. And then you internalize the shame of that, yeah. being told that by a professional or anybody, really. And then what happens to your mental health? So this is a huge mental health issue as well.
Do you have any thoughts about going global?
Oh, I do think we are global, but we wanted to start in the United States because there was no U.S. Representation, but we have a global alliance called APUR, and it is the Alliance for Patient-Centered UTI Research. So we are aligned with a group in the UK called Chronic UTI Campaign, another European group called Live UTI Free, and they are just wonderful leaders in this field, and then Chronic UTI Australia. So we have joined together as a global alliance to promote patient-centered research, and actually do patient-centered research, which Live UTI Free really leads. Yeah.
My next question was, what does patient-centered research and advocacy mean? But it just means that you're looking at the actual people with UTIs.
Yeah, that, for instance, there have been questionnaires about lifestyle and mental health that have been patient-centered, like just to let the global audience know this is such a huge crisis with lifestyle and mental health. And that's patient-centered research, where it's not about, you know, necessarily the microbiology of it, but it could be, because patient-centered research, to me at least, means the patients are involved with helping the researchers to craft what they're doing so that they're testing or researching the needs that the patients are expressing. So, and I have wonderful connections with some of the researchers around the world, actually. And everybody wants to work together because everybody's kind of in the same boat of wanting to get this problem at least addressed more thoroughly. Yeah.
Now, I know for a fact that my audience is international. Are those links to maybe some research or something going on in their own country, like in England or something, are those available on your website?
If you go to my website and there's a top tab called Apure, A-P-U-R, and click on that, that is the Alliance for Patient-Centered UTI Research. And there's a page on that. I think that will take you to links for Chronic UTI Australia, Chronic UTI Campaign, and Live UTI Free. And there they have even more information. So yeah, on what people might want to read. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So tell us exactly where we find you on the World Wide Web.
Oh, thank you. It's letstalkuti.org. No apostrophe. And yeah, that's our website, and we're excited to have it out there.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Oh, and then also for Instagram, it's Let's Talk UTI. And Facebook, Let's Talk UTI with spaces and an apostrophe. So, yeah.
Okay. I was just looking at your socials up here. So you've mentioned them. That's great. Can I ask you a personal question before we close?
Sure.
It's about your two kids, Heidi and Belle.
Those are my dogs.
I know. Yes, which is Heidi the black one? Which is the black one?
The black one is Heidi. We got her when we were spending time in Breckenridge, Colorado. And we got her in Breckenridge. So we were reminded of those old Heidi books that I just loved so much as a kid about Heidi
in the
mountains.
She's just got the sweetest face.
Oh, thank
you.
You
just want to give her a hug. I came across. Yeah. And so Belle is it black and white or brown and white?
She's black and white, and she is a St. Bernard poodle mix. And Heidi is a Bernese Mountain Dog and Golden Retriever mix.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see Belle's combination. I wouldn't have guessed that with Heidi, but...
you can just... when she gets in the sunlight, it's gold. Her black hair is gold. It's very
okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It was when I came across the picture, I'm going like, okay, first of all, Heidi, the black one?
Yes.
Yeah. Heidi's got like the sweetest face ever. And yet Belle looks like it's like, oh, you want to have an adventure? I'm up for an adventure. She's just got that look on her face.
Agnes, you've nailed them to the T.
Oh, is that right?
You heard a glance at that one photo. You've got them to the T.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that funny? Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's just that look on Heidi was just, it just grabbed my heartstrings.
Well, that's how she is. She's a heart doggy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Okay, thank you. Anything else about Heidi and Belle?
Oh, I could go on forever. I'm not sure. Do you want me to talk about them? They're really my husband's dogs because he runs with them every single day, even in sub-zero temperatures. And they're my dogs for cuddling. So we both do different things with them.
It works out perfectly
yeah.
for me. Yeah, that's great. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes. All of the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, what's your experience with urinary tract infections? Please talk to us. We need to raise the awareness around them and normalize, as Laura just said, normalize talking about them. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Or, and I'm going to steal a line that I used on Paula because I'm one of those people that laugh at my own jokes. it was an accident with Paula, but I had asked what burning question did I not ask Laura? As I say, it was accidental with Paula, but I thought, no, I'm one of these people that laugh
Perfect.
At my own jokes. Anyways, ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. Share this episode. I just finished saying, and we have been talking for almost an hour, that we need to raise the awareness around UTIs and normalize talking about them. There's a good chance that a friend has suffered in silence, and she needs to know she's not alone. So by sharing this episode, you're going to help normalize this, and then she'll share it with someone else, and so on and so on. If you like this conversation, click the follow button at your favorite podcast platform. That one small click will help us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll be notified whenever a new episode comes out. Laura Helgeson, thank you so much for being my guest today and keeping the conversation And the facts. I mean, that's just huge, behind this important health issue going. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Have a great rest of week.
You too.